Well, a good day to you all. I'm Dr. James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a division of the James Dobson Family Institute. My guest today is a man that I've known and appreciated for many years, going back to my days at Focus on the Family. He's Rabbi Daniel Lappin. He's an Orthodox Jew and a brilliant scholar. As my listeners know, I'm an evangelical Christian, but the rabbi and I have much in common, and we share a mutual respect for one another. Let me tell you a little bit more about him. Rabbi Lappin was born in Johannesburg, South Africa, but moved to Jerusalem and then on to London to study mathematics and economics. He then came to the United States. He's a best-selling author and the host of his own radio show on the Blaze Network. Rabbi, I think you're on the phone. Thanks for joining us today on Family Talk.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dobson. Yes, it has been a few years that we've been friends and we've fought a few battles side by side and even been bloodied a little bit together, but we come out with heads unbowed.
It goes with the territory. Do you remember being my guest on Focus on the Family about 25 years ago?
Yes, I do.
You know, what we talked about then was our concern for the country and where it was headed. And as it turned out, our apprehensions were valid. And I think America's in greater danger now than then. Do you agree with that?
Our concerns were very well founded, and we were in certain ways prescient, and the situation is indeed only considerably more serious and more perilous now than it was then. As a matter of fact, both of us would find it easy to list easily 3, 4, 5, 6 cultural phenomena which are commonly accepted today, and which, had we spoken about 25 years ago, we would have sounded insane.
One of them, I think, was the sanctity of human life. Do you remember what some of the others were?
Yeah, we absolutely spoke about the abortion crisis and the way that concept was steamrolling through the culture. But had we spoken then about homosexual marriage, had we spoken about that adolescents can go to doctors and request to have their gender switched, we would have sounded like lunatics had we said that that was coming down the road. We would have been called fearmongers had we said that the day is going to come. And that in many medical communities, the wishes of the parents are of no account.
That would not have entered my mind, and if it had, I'd have gone screaming down the road. I still find it breathtaking, not only what is happening there to people who would be considered to be adults, even in their early 20s, but the schools are teaching it as early as kindergarten, where they're telling them that they're not a boy or a girl. They can be whatever they choose. Gender is a choice. And in some schools, they don't line up as boys or girls. That would be offensive and taking a decision away from a child to decide for himself or herself. That's child abuse, in my view.
It's extraordinary, really, because when you think about it, when a perfectly healthy-looking young woman goes and says, "I feel fat, I don't want to eat," we immediately say, look, what you feel doesn't matter. What you have is an eating disorder, and this is a psychiatric problem. We want you to speak to a counselor. That's how, when a girl has a misperception of herself, that's what happens. But if that same girl goes and says, "I have a perception of myself as a man," nobody says go and see a psychiatrist. And as a matter of fact, you would be charged with malpractice if you did that. Immediately, she's taken seriously, and she's very quickly put on a program for what they like to call gender reversal, but which is really just mutilation. And it's interesting that when it comes to food perceptions, we all immediately recognize it to be psychiatric, not fact. But when she says, "I'm the wrong gender in the wrong body," then we do not send her to a psychiatrist, we send her to a surgeon. And I believe this is because very early in the Bible, in the first couple of chapters of Genesis, we have repeated several times, male and female, he created them. And the underlying agenda on the secular left, as was frankly conceded by prominent leftists during the 50s, people who said very clearly, our goal is to turn every virtue into a vice and every vice into a virtue, and thereby undo two millennia of Judeo-Christian tradition. But I think precisely because the Bible states very clearly that we are two genders, male and female, the secular left is absolutely determined to undermine that construct and create this illusion of a spectrum of gender.
Yeah. It's amazing how much progress that the advocates of that crazy point of view have made in convincing the people of the West that there is really not a gender with which we're born. You know, children often get confused about their gender for a period of time, but you go act on that and you do irreversible surgery or take hormones that change the body, and they may change their mind, but it's too late. And there's that confusion follows them well into adult life. I just see that as disastrous, especially because parents, particularly those that have the kind of views that we do about traditional values and beliefs, they have no role to play in it. You only have one choice, and that's take your kid out. And if you don't have a place for him to go, you're in trouble. So it's just, it's a disaster culturally.
Well, one good part of this, I think, one little piece of encouraging and consoling news is that the pledge we all say so reliably, one nation under God, is simply no longer true. We are no more or less a divided nation now than we were in the middle of the 19th century, and that was over a moral issue. And today the country is every bit as divided. We're not one nation under God. We're two nations occupying one piece of real estate, one under God and one doing everything that's in its power to reject that relationship. About half the population tends to lean towards the academic and intellectual elite who are promoting this bilge water on college campuses. And about half the population rejects it with a laugh and says, these guys are crazy. Men are men and women are women. We really are two nations.
Without having a solid spiritual connection to the Almighty, people make up their moral values as they go along, and I think that's led to the moral decline that we're seeing now. I think we probably talked about that on that historic broadcast. How do you see what's taking place sexually and morally throughout the country at this time?
I think that there really are not a lot of different civilizations. What the Incas had was a culture. It was not a civilization. A civilization does not offer human sacrifices and disembowel people on special altars. That is a very primitive culture. And there are about 5,000 cultures in the world today, but there really is only one civilization. And that is the civilization built on the foundations of the Bible. Western civilization, which today is excoriated and demonized and villainized, but it is still the only civilization that has created the comfort and the wealth and the affluence that have enabled this class of intellectual elite to emerge, doing everything possible to undermine that that civilization. And the surest way of undermining it is through a process we think of as socialism or communism. But us polite people, we know that we shouldn't use the communism word. We must use the polite accepted word progressivism. Because after all, who can possibly be anti-progress? Progressivism is very much focused on the idea that family needs to be eliminated. And whether this was in the Soviet Union or in the Maoist Long March or in Cuba or on American university campuses, the traditional family is undermined. And you can see why they would do that. For instance, it's very well known, this is no big secret, that the overwhelming majority of people on the welfare rolls in America are people who are not part of an intact traditional family. They're just not. People who are part of intact functioning families very seldom have to turn to government. And so naturally, organizations that or groups of people that are doing their best to grow government do not like the idea of a family, because families make people independent of government. The advocates of big government want people to be dependent. They want them to need them, because then we can create government programs, new and wonderful government programs that will solve problems we didn't even know we had. And then we can raise taxes to fund all these wonderful programs. And the destructiveness continues with imposing increasingly confiscatory rates of taxation on hardworking American families in order to underwrite multi-generational dysfunction. That's how it goes. And if you're a person of the left, you applaud and say, amen, that's exactly how we want it to go.
You know, I have recognized and really regretted the fact that for 25, 30 years, it's been obvious that those who we now call progressives, we used to call them radical liberals, really want to get rid of the family. And for the first time, they're admitting it. They're saying it openly. The Democratic Party, I don't want to make this political, but they are not supportive of the family. And frequently, sometimes Republicans have not been either. The family is left without an advocacy. You know, the possum growers of America have representatives in Washington to support their views. There are very few supporters of the traditional family, and it is dying right in front of us. And as it goes, so goes the nation. I really believe that the welfare of this country and of Western civilization depends on the stability of the family, and I'm sure you agree.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that has struck me about you is your appreciation as an Orthodox Jew for conservative Christianity and its impact on the country, not only here, but around the world. And in fact, you wrote a best-selling book called America's Real War.
That's right.
That let me quote one line from it. You said, "A weakening Christianity in America threatens all Americans, including Jews." Elaborate on that, if you will.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I've often said that Jews and Israel's safety belt can be defined as America's Bible belt. And it's absolutely true, because the values that we hold true, the values that the founders based their structuring of the Constitution and the Republic in general, and the values that you and I hold sacred, all are derived from the same source. And one can think of it as, you know, if you don't like the word scripture or Bible, think of it as the manufacturer's instruction manual. And that's really what the Bible is. It's the manufacturer's instruction manual for the safe operation of human society. And it starts off one of the very, very first observation that it's the first thing that makes God unhappy. The first time God says not good, after eight times telling us how good everything is, the first time the Bible says not good is for man to be alone. And so obviously social structures, not just marriage, marriage is part of it, but every form of social structure is absolutely essential for the maintenance of society. If somebody decides to detach himself from all other people and go it alone, then as Hobbes said in the Leviathan, life will be brutal and unpleasant and short. You can't do it by yourself. But we are in the process of eroding the very values that made the society possible in the first place.
Well, that's the essence of what I've been trying to say for all these years. You know, I'm a very strong supporter of Israel, and I visited it again a couple of years ago where our entourage gave us an opportunity to meet with Prime Minister Netanyahu. Talk about Israel today from your perspective.
Well, I have no special insight on it any more than anybody else, but I've got eyes in my head, and I've come to see over the last few years that Israel really has emerged as a moral barometer of nations. Those who oppose Israel and oppose it vigorously tend to be the bad guys on the international stage, and the good guys support Israel. Now, there's a very good reason for that. And the reason is that today, the titanic struggle on planet Earth is really between barbarism and the Bible. I mean, it's as stark as that. Numerous Arab leaders, numerous Muslim leaders of the terrorist persuasion have quoted Suleiman the Magnificent saying that we love death the way the West loves life. And they're quite right. Now, the sad thing, of course, is that that what happens is that as Western democracies commit suicide by abandoning the moral values that held it all together, they tend to slide into an alliance with barbarism. And so it's really you're either for civilization or you're for barbarism. That is the titanic struggle.
So it really comes down to a choice between two worldviews that are in competition with each other and are hostile to each other. And it is not at all clear which direction our country is going to take, is it?
At the moment, it's frighteningly fragile and utterly unpredictable. Very, very worrying. Yes, of course, it could go either way. We've never been, you know, everyone says, oh, this is the most important election, or this is the most, but things are really different now because there does come a point from which return from the precipice is very hard, if not impossible.
And that is hanging in the balance at this time. Let me go back to the last time you and I were together in Washington, D.C. It was a number of years ago.
Yes.
And I asked you then why so many of your Jewish brothers and sisters in the United States are often hostile or at best indifferent to what we call the Promised Land. You gave me an answer that day. I'm going to ask it again. Why? Why? I don't understand that.
The reason is because being Jewish is defined as having Jewish ancestry. And that results in something that my Christian friends never have to deal with. I'm sure you never have to have somebody coming to you and say, Dr. Dobson, please help me. I'm a proud, committed Christian, but I am an atheist as well. And, you know, you lie. Yeah. That doesn't work. You know, that's like saying,
it's a non sequitur.
No, it's like saying, hey, you know, I'm a cannibal, but I'm a really devoted vegetarian. it doesn't work that way. But in Judaism, because in a certain sense, it's self-defined. It's not that somebody embraces the values of Judaism on May the 14th, 1979, and from that moment became a Jew. They think of themselves as Jews all along. So a guy like George Soros, who hates me just as much as he hates you, by the way, will proudly proclaim himself to be Jewish when in reality, if I think of Judaism as a commitment to a set of values as laid out in the Old Testament, that would not define George Soros. It would define me, but it would not define George Soros because his values are shaped by something quite different from the Old Testament. Unfortunately, because ordinarily you'd think it'd be perfectly logical. If somebody says, hey, I'm an atheist, well, then goodbye. You're not a Jew anymore. That's fine. Free country. Make your choice. You can be whatever you like. But you can't be both. Unfortunately, people certainly think they can be both. And so people who have long since abandoned the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, people who have long ago renounced the rules and rituals and structures of the religion of Judaism, nonetheless call themselves Jewish, but have replaced those Jewish values with the values of secular fundamentalism, mm-hmm. which are essentially the values found on the left wing of the Democratic Party.
Let me ask you a related question that I believe goes back to that last conversation. Explain to me why Jewish people, having come through the horrors of the Holocaust and the murders of 6 million Jews and Gypsies and Poles and homosexuals, explain why Jews are not natural defenders of the sanctity of human life from womb to tomb. Why is socialism and liberal ideology not an anathema to those whose families and history has seen the worst of socialism in action in the Nazi regime and in other countries?
Well, for that 30% of American Jews who are faithful to the rules and rituals and regulations of Judaism, they are powerfully and intensely pro-life and hostile to the culture of abortion. But the majority of Jews, probably two-thirds, having replaced the values of Judaism with the values of secular fundamentalism, here is one of the big rules that distinguishes how you and I look at the world and how the left looks at the world. You and I look at the world in a way which makes the past and the future every bit as important as the present. In the Lord's language, in Hebrew, the four-letter name for God is made up of the words past, present, future. He's always. And that is a reflection of how we look at the world. And so what happened 2,000 years ago for you is as real as if it happened today.
Yes.
And for me, what happened 3,300 years ago at the foot of Mount Sinai is as real as if it happened yesterday. But what liberalism says is only now counts. And so the fact that 70 years ago, millions of Jews were killed for being Jewish, you know, I'm very sorry about it, but, you know, tough things happen in this world. Far more recently, the Hutus killed 1 million Tutsis. And a little before that, at the turn of the century, the Turks killed a few million Armenians. Hey, things happen, you know. But here and now, we've got to fight against the real evils of our time, like climate change.
How do you compare those? The horrors of gassing 6 million people. Why that doesn't change our view of everything, I don't know.
Because to them, they'll immediately turn it around and say, well, nothing is worse than today's systemic racism. That's the only evil we have to fight against. They're not interested in anything that happened yesterday. And that's why they're not even talking about slavery. They're talking about systemic racism. It's today, here and now. There is no future. I care about the future. And so every life is precious. Every unborn child is precious. But that's not true. If I only cared about the present, I wouldn't say that. And caring about the present is a hallmark of secular fundamentalism, which is today's official state religion.
You've been listening to a fascinating interview Dr. Dobson conducted recently with Orthodox Jewish Rabbi Daniel Lappin. Visit today's broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org for more information about Rabbi Lappin's books, his radio program, and his ministries. That's drjamesdobson.org, and then go to the broadcast button at the top of the page. Now, before we go, Family Talk is happy to announce that we have a brand new website. This fresh new layout delivers our most important and meaningful content to you right on our homepage. Our most helpful new feature is a built-in player for our daily programs. Now, when you go to drjamesdobson.org, the daily broadcast is only a tap away. Experience all our new site has to offer right now by going to drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. Thanks so much for listening today and for your consistent support of our ministry. Your tax-deductible financial contributions allow us to continue fighting for marriages and families all across the country. You can make your pledge over the phone by calling 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. You can also make a contribution online when you go to drjamesdobson.org, or you can mail us. Send your gift through the mail to Post Office Box 39000, Colorado Springs, Colorado 80949. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for the conclusion of Dr. Dobson's conversation with Rabbi Daniel Lappin, right here on Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.